Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Are you not entertained?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to History in Technicolor. I am joined by Wolf.
Hello.
And this week we are going to do a film called Good Vibrations. Now, when I say Good Vibrations, Wolf, what is the first band that springs to your mind?
Beach Boys.
Correct. This is nothing about the... Stop. Stop now immediately, otherwise you're fired. Everybody, just so that you know, right from the beginning, this has got nothing to do with the Beach Boys. In fact, I think it's probably as diametrically opposed to the Beach Boys as you could probably get. I mean, I know it could be wrong, but there may be a bigger opposite, but it's a pretty big opposite. So, Good Vibrations, what is the movie? You may well not have heard of it, I imagine. This is the story of a man called Terry Hooley. Terry Hooley was a music enthusiast, and his influence on the success of punk in Belfast during the Troubles is kind of legendary. I am covering it. Well, Wolf, you better ask me the question about, you might ask, why am I covering this movie?
David, why did you select this movie?
Right. How interesting you should ask me that question. I'm covering it because it is a heartwarming film. And I've come to realise, Wolf, that feel-good movies are really pretty much the only movie I'm interested in. I mean, there's a part of the 12-year-old me that still lives within me, which is interested in movies like Zulu and Master and Commander. But essentially, it's Notting Hill and Chalet Girl for me.
What about the Dolly Parton Christmas movie?
Actually,
that's very feel-good.
Was that the absolutely appalling musical we watched?
Yeah.
That made me want to cut my liver out and eat it in front of everybody.
Yeah.
I think that is the movie. So no, not that one. But Chalet Girl, yeah. Anyway, so it's a heartwarming film, or I found it to be so. You may not have done. It's full of great music. And it's funny, too, in a situation that really wasn't very funny because it's set against the background of the Troubles. At the same time, it kind of has the ring of truth about it. It creates a fully rounded figure of who we are, I think it does. And yeah, it's low budget, and that has the feel of truth to me. You know, it feels like a gritty, low budget movie, which I rather like, rather than a big schlocky blockbuster, like, for example, The Last of the Mohicans. And it does a really good job of describing why punk worked at that time and that place. And when I were a lad and punk was current, I was a middle class lad in a nice grammar school. So I found punks a bit scary. So that's why. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, it makes complete sense.
So let me ask you a question, because we watched this together, didn't we?
Yep.
The family, because I'd said, why didn't we watch this together as a family during lockdown and then discuss it on Zoom? And once I'd done that, none of you watched it, did you?
No.
So it wasn't until we together and I could shackle you to the sofas and then beat you with an ash twig that you actually watched it.
That is correct.
Yeah. Did you find the ash twig irritating, getting your way in the enjoyment of the movie?
No. And sometimes I enjoyed it more than the movie.
Oh dear. So, I mean, my reflection on the watching it togetherness was that there wasn't a great whoop of joy at any point during the movie from either you or Millie, or indeed anybody, and you went to bed in silence. Did you enjoy the movie?
Yeah. Okay. So there's something I have to admit straight off the bat. Uh-huh. I knew nothing about anyone or anything in this movie. And
Nor did I, actually, when I first saw it.
Interesting. See, I thought I presumed you maybe had loose memories, connections to the story, remember headlines, bits of music, and there was some nostalgia for the time period, of which I had none of that. I kind of thought that maybe I wasn't the target audience. I was looking through the reviews of this movie and seeing all these people like Mark Kermode and everyone talking about it, I was like, oh, this kind of makes sense that people from that era and that age might really enjoy this film, which, you know, it didn't connect to me. That being said, it was fine. I thought the movie was fine. Bits of it I quite enjoyed. I just had some issues with it, which we can talk about later, but I thought the music was great. I thought the story was fun, slightly uplifting. It features two members of the cast from Game of Thrones, for anyone out there who's interested.
That's fair. That could be right.
So obviously the lead, Richard Dormer, he was Beric Dondarrion.
Yes.
And then Liam Cunningham, who's pretty funny in this movie, played Davos. Mm.
Yes.
The cast also includes Jodie Whittaker, Dylan Moran. There were some good names in there.
So, okay. So you thought it was kind of okay. You are praising with a very, very faint praise. Okay, it's 2013. Low budget movie. Created a lot of funding in Ireland and Northern Ireland. It takes us, broadly speaking, from Hoola's life in 1960s and 1970s Belfast, from 60s Belfast, but focuses on the troubles during the 70s. It's basically a biopic of part of a slice of Terry Hoola's life, the most exciting bit possibly. Terry Hoola is known as the godfather of punk. And it's not a complete thing. You know, it ends at the end with an iconic punk gig headlined by the Outcasts that happened, I think, in 1980. And Terry Hooley keeps on going in his life, opening and closing record stores. The director was Lisa Barrost-Sarr, a producer and director known for a couple of other films, one called Ordinary Love in 2019, which I'd never heard of, but I think if you're a cognoscenti, maybe you have. It stars, as you say, Jodie Whittaker as Ruth, as his first wife. Ruth, who is actually a playwright and poet, though that doesn't come across in the film, which I think was probably one of Millie's issues with the movie, I assume, and you might have the same one.
Well, I have a lot of problems with that character.
So, and then Richard Dormer and Liam Cunningham, you've already mentioned. It tells a story about how Terry Hooley starts off as a great enthusiast for music. It describes how he then gets into punk. And it at the centre of it is a story that I did know, which is about how punk takes off in Northern Ireland. When I was a lad, the group I liked most was Stiff Little Fingers. I hadn't heard of Outcasts or Rudy, but both of those came across very well in the film. And how he organizes a film label and, sorry, record label from the back of an envelope, creates a label. And his big success is The Undertones. And at the heart of the film is that story about how John Peel recognizes the Undertones and the Undertones become this massive band. And then it ends on a gig when everybody gets together and it ends with him singing a song. And it's kind of got a good uplifting feeling that these young people are finding meaning in their lives through punk at a time of incredible strife. And that's where it ends. So how convincing did you find the portrayal in the movie of the Troubles?
If I'm being slightly harsh, I'd say what Troubles? Because there's almost no history of the time period that's particularly conveyed to me in a way that I remember. That is being slightly harsh. There's a series of montages of like news footage and historical footage from the time, which is used every now and then just to remind me, like, you know, what's happening, and that's there. And people make reference to it and there are a few connections, but I always view this as a history movie about Terry Hooley and the music. And the Troubles is just something that exists in the background and wasn't even used that much to produce tension and drama within the film for me. So, yeah, I didn't learn anything the Troubles.
No, I thought I thought it dealt brilliantly with the Troubles, actually, just to take exception. You're absolutely right. It doesn't tell you about the history of the Troubles, but I think it does that very consciously because the story is about how punk creates meaning for people caught in a war which is not of their, that they're not interested in. So I did a project, and we're getting into history here, but about 18 months ago on Henley-on-Thames and the English Civil War. And the very strong impression you got from that, and you got from many studies of English Civil War, actually, is that there was a struggle between two groups of people, and the ordinary people just tried to get on with their lives and survive it, which is not a romantic story. It's not the great story of great change and all the rest of it and great seismic political movements, but it's quite convincing. And that's the story here. The story here is how Terry Hooley, I think, helps young people who are already finding meaning in punk and spreads that message, gets more people and more recognition for punk, and therefore gives people an out from the Troubles. And therefore the Troubles are knocked back into the background on purpose. Needs to remind us what the context is, how violent life was there. But that's not the story, and it's not going to let it take over the story. That's my view anyway.
I agree. I'm not necessarily saying it's a bad thing when I say that I didn't learn much about the Troubles. That's just more from a history side, being truthfully honest, that's not the priority of the movie. So as an audience member, I don't gain much from it. It did remind me, I guess the only other thing I've been watching is Derry Girls, where you get all these references to like the army coming in and there's this bomb gone off and a car bomb or something, but these are all things that happen in the background and they don't really affect the actual stories of your characters. So I think it's an interesting focus, and I have no objections with how they choose to kind of push it to the background. I think the only thing I would say is when the soldiers arrive in that one scene, or when the Troubles kind of injects itself back in, it can't be kept at bay completely. I don't find those scenes that successful because it's constantly being pushed away. So they didn't work as well for me. I get this slight moment, but I'm always kept slightly at a distance from it. And
see, I really liked that scene with the army for different reasons. The scene with the IUC, it's resolutely non-political, isn't it? It resolutely does not take sides between... It's not sectarian. And indeed, I think they overblow that a bit because they paint a picture of 60s Belfast, which was supposed to be about, oh, we were a normal society that just argued about politics. And I think that's slightly disingenuous. You know, sectarianism has been a living, breathing part of Northern Ireland, I would argue, for a long time. But then I'm not Northern Irish, so... I can be corrected on that. But I didn't find that convincing. But once we're in it, once we're in the Troubles, it resolutely refuses to take sides. And that's, once again, because that's not what the movie's about. The movie is about ordinary people trying to make a life And part of that, part of those, one of the groups of those ordinary people is the army. These aren't people who want to be there, particularly. It is their job. They signed up there to be in the army. So fair dues. They've got to do their duty. But they have no great animus. You know, we're not identifying baddies here. The situation is the baddie. So, I mean, that's my, for me, that scene works really well because it creates a unity of experience from all sides. You've got Catholics, Protestants, army folks, all in
that. Yeah, it sets everybody out essentially as the bad guy, but without there being one single figure. So, for example,
the bad guy is the Troubles.
So when those Nazis like trash his store, the whole movie isn't about how they're the enemy. Yeah. They're just one kind of force that's operating at this time.
I mean, I think there are a couple of occasions. That's one of them where the Troubles do intervene so that you are aware, but not just from the montages, that it has an effect on society. The other one is where they go into the group and Rudy play one of their songs, SSRUC, and everybody gets behind it and the RUC beat a hasty retreat and leave the young folks to doing what they're doing, which is just listening to music.
Okay.
And I think that gives you a slice of the intervention of the Troubles in
that being said,
life.
Which I agree, that scene is a good scene. One of the best scenes in the movie. Do you think that the movie ever suffers because it doesn't really display that many more occasions of the kind of true anger and revolution and that punk attitude that's coming through in their music? Because surely all of their music is politically inspired, and yet the film is apolitical.
I don't know enough because I'm not Northern Irish and haven't lived through that. And, you know, I come from Loughborough. All we saw was on the news. But my feeling about the message of the movie is that the fury it presents is the fury of people caught up in a situation that they don't want to be in, and that there's a whole load of people in that situation who are not taking sides and don't want them to be sides. And that's the point of the movie. So, I mean, you might want, you know, in our days of Twitter political controversy, we might want a hard-hitting political drama, and there are loads of those. You know, The Hunger or whatever. It is not The Hunger. I get them mixed up. The one about, you know, Bobby Sands in the McQueen movie. They're all over the place, films about the Troubles and the political divide and things, films that take sides. This isn't about that. It consciously rejects that story about political anger, and it's a story about people getting on with their lives or wanting to, and about music and a person, Terry Hooley, who enables that. Well, that's my view anyway. And that's why I like this movie. It consciously says, sod the politics.
Yeah, agreed. I completely understand that. And I wouldn't necessarily argue with that, because obviously that's how you feel about it. And it does try to do that. I, for myself, maybe wanted the film to use more of the tension and the drama to hit slightly harder, but at strategic moments, just so that it can make the finale a little bit more inspiring for me. Like, I'd like a little bit more up and down. The film kind of rests at this consistent level.
Now, come on. Let's deal with that one then. So how did you feel when we got to the heart of the movie, which is his discovery of the undertones and the moment when John Peel plays Teenage Kicks twice on the radio?
How did I feel? I was like, oh, great.
You're barely human, Wolf, okay? I mean, I don't want to be insulting, obviously, but you're barely human. So you weren't jumping around. Well, of course, I know you weren't jumping in the room because I was there. I mean, that was a fantastic moment that I absolutely loved. When he found the moment in the recording studio when they realized what gold they had there, and the moment when John Peel played it and suddenly this small band from Northern Ireland, you know, hit the big time.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is great. Although I can never forget Terry Hooley basically having no interest in listening to them perform, having little interest in supporting them, and just being like, oh, whatever, okay, sure, I'll let you record something, but I assume it's going to be crap. Oh my God, suddenly it's the greatest song I've ever heard. And yeah, that little moment, it's how did we capture that? But maybe it's because I find Terry Hooley annoying as a person.
Yes. I can see why you might. We'll come on to that in a moment, actually. I mean, just to finish that, I would argue with you that he gives them a chance and nobody else was going to give them a chance. And he goes and hawks their record round London and he creates their chance. To say that he was dismissive of them, it's a little bit harsh on
you.
Terry,
do remember when they come into his store and...
Yeah, he doesn't think they're going to be great. But then he does get the studio for them and he does recognise the quality. And then he spends his life hawking their record, still as yet completely unproven, all the way around London.
Yes,
despite getting
but
lots
when
of
they're
PFOs.
Recording, he's not even bothering to be there for a while. And he turns up and he's like, "Ah, oh, well, was this terrible?" And he asks the guy, and obviously Davos Seaworthy's like, "That's the greatest thing I've ever recorded." And he's like, "Oh my God, I'm quick. I better put my headphones on."
Right, okay. Well, you know, I think...
It is a bit harsh. I think it's because, honestly, to me, Terry Hooley, and we'll come on to him, as you've said, I think he's a little bit out for himself, at least in this portrayal of the movie. And because he's so out for himself, how do I put this? If I was following the band, if I was following the Undertones, if I was following the bunch of kids, and they manage to break through and they get this one song recorded, and it's their one shot, come on, boys, we can do this. And they record it, and they're waiting, and then they're like, oh, it's amazing. And then they go to London. I'm like, yeah, I'm all in. But I'm wrapped up in the story of this, like, kind of power hungry, a little bit self-obsessed music producer who's trying to make it big and have this huge impact. So I always feel like I'm slightly on the, how do I put this? When I watch band biopics, the evil character in any band biopic is always the producer. They're always the evil producer who, like, abuses the band, like, robs them of money, who's like, makes them compromise and sell out. The producer is the man. And in this movie, we're on the side of the producer. So I'm always slightly on the wrong side of the story, but that's just for me.
But then he's not a producer in that normal fashion. The producer normally is the chap with money and who is out for money. And one thing about Terry Hooley, which is actually a bit annoying, but I think quite realistic, is that he's not out for the money. And I think that's very well drawn. Before we move on to that, though, could I just finish off the point about the Troubles and say that it's quite interesting that your view and my view about, you know, whether you want more or less of the Troubles is interestingly reflected in two of the bands that in the movie. So the Undertones and Stiff Little Fingers. We don't see anything of the Stiff Little Fingers, just hear one of their songs, Alternative Ulster. And actually those bands at the time got at each other quite a lot because the Undertones completely ignored the Troubles in their music. The Stiff Little Fingers never did. And the Undertones said, well, look, let's not be dominated by the Troubles. That's not what we're about. What we're about is great music. And the Stiff Little Fingers says, well, you're pretending it's not going on at all. And that kind of dynamic between SLF and the Undertones is actually in the film too, which I think is really interesting. I always think it's very funny when they go on Top of the Pops and somebody says, look at the clothes they're wearing. Anyway, so that was just one reflection. So going back to this thing about Terry, then let's talk about that. One of the things I really like about the movie is that this isn't a hagiography. It is in a sense that obviously somebody, maybe the Northern Irish director Lisa, has said, this is a great figure and I want to talk about them. But it's not a hagiography in the sense that it just presents this golden figure. Terry Hooley is stubborn as a bloody mule. He's got all his father in him. And I think that father-son dynamic is really interesting. He is completely uninterested in movie and in money and ignores the people around him and his family who are understandably a bit more interested in money because they're having to deal with the fallout. He is very self-obsessed. At the last scene when you have the big show in Ulster Hall, you think he's right in the middle of that. And you can understand why he would be, given that or how hard he's worked for these bands. But he's lapping up the glory. And then there's the scene where he basically lets one of the bands down, Rudy, I think, or is it the Outcasts, and forgets to insert the record into their promotional item. And that was their one big chance. And he messes it up for it. He doesn't really say sorry for it. He's not an easy character. And he's clearly not an easy man. But he believes in something passionately. And he helps the people that he wants to help, in that the young people of Belfast get something amazing from him, despite him as a difficult person.
So do you think it's a completely neutral perspective of him, or do you think the movie falls to one side on whether everything he did was worth it, whether his negative qualities can be excused?
It's not a balance sheet. And life isn't a balance sheet, says philosophically. And history isn't a balance sheet. You don't have to say at the end of it, let me take Cromwell, for example. Cromwell does some viciously horrible things, and he does some amazing things. You cannot reconcile the two. You cannot say, well, on balance, I think we should or shouldn't have had an Oliver Cromwell. But you have to keep both things in your mind. So Terry Hooley did some amazing things for the young people of Belfast and for punk rock, and to put it on the map in Belfast. He also treated some of the people close to him very dismissively, and he was clearly very egocentric. Those things both exist together, and the film puts them both up there.
Agreed. But I'll raise you this point. If the movie is completely neutral, so it's presenting kind of all sides to the story.
Well, it's not neutral.
Okay, that's what I mean. Like, yeah, it's not necessarily like pro-Terry or anti-Terry. I still think that it, for example, the Jodie Whittaker character as his wife is so sidelined in the movie.
Yeah.
And when he does terrible things to her and the family, the consequences are never displayed. So I think the heights of his achievements are really dwelt on, and you really explore them and you see all of the amazing things that happen.
Yeah.
The negatives are mentioned and quickly brushed over. So I slightly feel like, to me, the movie still wants us to be behind him. So it knows that he does a lot of crap, stupid things, like putting his family's home down on the like bank loan and then losing that, so that his wife loses her home as well. And she basically gave him everything. He didn't have anything. So he lost everything of hers and wasn't even sorry about it. And the movie's like, okay, quick brush over that. Yeah, they'll break up and she'll raise the kid on her own.
If it was a hagiography, that
agreed,
wouldn't have been in there.
But I still think that it's not particularly harsh on him. I still think it slightly pulls its punches.
Well, of course, people have done the movie because they think Terry Hooley's brilliant and a story worth telling, and they don't want to make it a work of misery. But think back to Thomas More and A Man for All Seasons, another one where we disagreed.
Is Terry Hooley
because you thought, you know, one of the Terry Thomas More was A Man for All Seasons is hagiography. Yeah, everything Thomas More does is correct and something we're meant to in that film look up to and aspire to. This is nothing like that. You see all those things that you've said, they're all there a bit brushed aside. They're all in the movie.
I hear your point. I won't argue too much with it. I just think that it still ultimately kind of needs us to be a little bit on Terry's side and to keep the story going, which I understand. Also, am I right that it's based on his memory and his account of everything that happened, like his own autobiography of a sense?
My understanding is they spoke to a lot of people, him, but many other people as well. So his daughter is on record as saying that, for example, that she didn't particularly like the movie because it made it look as though he deserted her and that wasn't true, which is interesting. And I do agree with you about the drawing of his wife is very thinly done. And you see a little tiny bit of the fact that she's a social worker. And I assume, therefore, that her work as a playwright and a poet and a leader of cultural projects in Northern Ireland come after her marriage to him. So I agree. You know, that's not the focus of the movie, and that's, you know, it's done in, and she kind of forgives him, and you see that happen. You know, that's, if you wanted a fuller, deeper story, then she should have been in it more. I think there's a limit to the amount you can put in a movie, but, you know,
there
I
is.
Agree. She's dealt with in a very shallow
so way. I won't dwell on it too much. I just think everyone apart from Terry is dealt with quite shallowly. They're kind of, everything has to support his story and just kind of push him forward.
Yeah, it's a biography.
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, the one scene that most annoys me in the whole movie is the one you talk about, which is him getting up on stage at the end and taking all of the credit. And the reason it annoys me, and this is why it highlights most perfectly why I dislike him, is that either while he's on stage or just prior, he talks about how the movement should have no figurehead. And the movement, it shouldn't be about Terry Hooley. It's about the music. It's about the bands. It's about punk in Northern Ireland. And then he's like, ah, screw that. It's all about Terry. And he's like, he's lapping it up. I want him to be a bigger person and to actually, I don't think he practices what he preaches. And I know the movie is just clear and honest about that. So that's why I'm able to make that interpretation.
I think that's why it's such a good movie, because I like the figure of his father. I mean, his father is as miserable as hell. And I like the coverage of his mother too. I mean, both these, they don't get much of the film, but his father is an incredibly difficult sod who believes very much in his communist ideals and will not compromise. And everybody around him, you can tell, has had to compromise so that he cannot compromise. And that's what Terry Hooley is like too. He's like his father. And that it makes the point intelligently, I think, that heroes or great events have a cost. And the cost is paid by the people around Terry Hooley. I think that's great that a feel-good movie, which I think is very funny and quite uplifting, is able at the same time to tell that story.
That is an interesting way to look at it, because I think I was ultimately being like, I know that you're telling me this is a feel-good movie. So I was concerned that it was in some ways being really accepting of all the things that he does and being really accepting of the contradictions that he employs. Like, he seems to exhibit so many of the personality traits and desires which he opposes.
But you didn't need any of that stuff. You didn't need, as a filmmaker, to put in the incident where he forgets to put the record in. You didn't need to show the moment when it came out that he'd mortgaged his house against the, you know, cutting the record. The whole load of things you didn't need to put in there that they put in. And that's surely to their credit.
Yeah, I'm not saying... I think just what I mean is I find his contradictions, while perhaps interesting, mostly frustrating.
Okay, did you find it funny?
Yeah, I did. I particularly thought that the studio production guy, Sir Davos, was pretty funny in his little role.
Mm-hmm. It was very good.
A lot of the young guys playing in the bands were pretty funny, and the hijinks they get up to on the road. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very good. Yes, and there are some nice bits which felt very typical of the time and probably every time. So when they went out into the countryside, there were some lovely dance scenes in the village halls with everybody sitting around the edge like wallflowers. There's also a funny moment, although it's a bit mean, of course, so I'm sure you'll hate it, which the when the outcasts come up, having he signed Rudy and he's promised to cut him a record, and Rudy says, God, there's no way anybody's ever going to cut a record for us. And Terry says, yeah, we can do this, and goes away and does it. Then the outcasts come out and say, hey, what about us? And he said, well, I'm not that pissed. And I thought that was quite funny, if though slightly mean. So I thought it was funny. I had lots of humor in it.
Yeah, it's a nice film, and it's enjoyable. And who doesn't love being in a record store for most of a movie? It's a great place to be. And most of the time, it's, you know, the movie's screaming, stick it to the man and follow your love of music. So I'm all behind that.
Okay. Anything else that you'd like to say about the movie as a success or failure as a film?
No, I understand why people like it. It's just maybe not completely for me. And I think it's just a bit, maybe not run-of-the-mill in its story, but a bit run-of-the-mill in terms of how it's physically like filmed and made. So whenever I found myself losing slight interest in what's happening on the screen, it wasn't being delivered to me in an interesting way that can help balance that out.
It does. Okay, then as a historical record, I mean, I spent a bit of time looking about how accurate it was about Terry Hooley, and they seem to work very hard to keep it accurate about Terry. You know, it looks, as far as biopics go, it seems to stick to all the different particular stages of his life, and he did have these visions of Hank Williams and I Saw the Light. He did lose his sight in an eye. It doesn't talk much about his involvement with the anti-Vietnam movement, the CND and the peace movements and that sort of thing. But that sort of came a bit before the focus of the movie. Doesn't mention interesting things like the fact that he met John Lennon in London and had a screaming argument with him. Lennon was trying to raise money for the IRA at the time, and Hooley decked him, which I thought was quite an interesting story. That wasn't in the film. Really should have been.
But I'm guessing... So, David, I'm guessing they don't put that scene in the movie because it's too political.
Probably. I don't know why. And maybe John Lennon's estate would have sued him. But anyway, I don't know. But that's quite an interesting story. The Rudy gig with the SSRUC chant apparently did happen. He hated the Outcasts. Actually, the Outcasts apparently were much more violent than was shown in the film. Actually, yes, it says, and man, it says that Hooley did sign the Stiff Little Fingers, which is quite interesting. So it's quite interesting they weren't in the movie because, you know, second to the Undertones, they're probably the biggest band, I'd have thought. And then there's the John Peel story actually happened. And John Peel, you see, you're probably not aware that John Peel is the greatest DJ that ever lived, are you?
I've heard people say it. Oh, there is that great scene where you see a young Tony Blackburn on Top of the Pops, though. I think it was Tony Blackburn.
I might have missed that one. It could well have been, yes. Because Tony Blackburn was actually trendy once, amazingly enough. Anyway, so that actually happens, and John Peel did in fact turn up at the Ulster Hall concert, which was great. So, and Hooley was attacked by the UFF thugs. So did you notice, by the way, Adrian Dunbar in the world's worst wig?
But I don't know who Adrian Dunbar is. You kept saying this. Like,
do you not know Line of Duty? Have you not seen that?
Oh, no.
He's in that. He's quite famous. I think you'd know him if you took the wig off, actually. So I thought, historically speaking, it was quite accurate. And whereas the Troubles don't, as we've discussed, don't come into it in fine detail, they are, you know, there's nothing inaccurate about them, as it were. So I thought historically, as a biopic, it was pretty accurate, though far from complete, because, you know, it's a slice of his life.
Yeah, I mean, I won't disagree. That's your research. It sounds pretty good. The reviews for the movie are very good. I read news.
They are. Really people loved reviews. It, didn't they?
So I understand that I'm slightly on the outside, in my opinions. I think maybe, and it's not necessarily the film's fault, I just wanted to be on the side of the musicians a bit more. I wanted to kind of see how they felt and what it was like for them as the ones creating the music and being, you know, having the passion to write and inspire and want to have that same influence on the people around. So I just was less interested in seeing it from the perspective of Terry Hooley.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but it was an unfortunate film about Terry Hooley, which is unfortunate. Okay, great. So quality of film out of 10?
5.
Fine, and I will go for 8.
Better than Last of the Mohicans.
Better than Last of the Mohicans. Considerably better, actually. I may put Last of the Mohicans down to 6 in sympathy. This is a far greater film. It's more honest. It's more amusing. It's more engaging. It's more real. It's gritty. It's not high budget. It's just a better movie than Last of the Mohicans.
Well, I'm pleased for you, David.
Okay, we'll agree to differ. And historical accuracy, within its limits, because I think it is reasonably, you know, accurate about his life. It doesn't tell the bigger picture in great detail, but nor is it inaccurate. So I'd give it an 8.
Okay, yeah. I'll trust you on that. Would you recommend?
Oh, yes. Well, I, of course, as you can tell, would recommend it enormously to anybody. If you want a great movie with some really interesting music that you may not normally have listened to, and you want to see a slice of what music can do to a society and a group of people, then I think it's a great movie. What about you?
Yeah, I think most people will have a good time watching it. Pretty fun. And it's on the BFI player at the moment, I believe, in the UK. So people can watch that there through whatever they want to use.
Okay, well, we can't tell you what we're going to do next time, can we? Or yes, you have decided what we're going to do.
We're going to do Belle, and we're going to do The Private Life of Henry VIII.
Yeah, so The Private Life of Henry VIII first, isn't it? And then the one after that, we're going to do Belle. Okay. So everybody, pile onto Facebook and tell Wolf that he's wrong. Or alternatively, pile onto Facebook and tell Wolf that he's right in thinking essentially this film sucks. and come and tell us what you think of the movie. And we will see you next time. Okay. Bye from me.
Bye from me.
Are you not entertained?